2.05. Of all the visitors ever to climb the steps to her forge, Ambassador Melgator was one of the least welcome. Coriel Zeth watched the man approach, his thin body wrapped in a dark, ermine-trimmed robe, his few overt augmetics concealed beneath a hood of dark velvet. Though Kelbor Hal's messenger was still some distance away, Zeth's enhanced vision saw that the ambassador had changed since last she had seen him. His skin was waxen and unhealthy, yet his eyes remained dark pools of sinister purpose, like a bearer of bad news, eager to spread his misery. However, Melgator's presence, as unwelcome and unlooked for as it was, did not worry her so much as that of his companion. Sheathed in an all-enclosing body glove of a gleaming synthetic material that rippled like blood across her skin, a slender female figure followed a discreet distance behind the ambassador. Zeth needed no help from the new sphere to recognize what this woman was.
"Is that what I think it is?"
asked Magos Polk in a soft cant of binary. Zeth could read her apprentice's disquiet in the formulation of his numerics and hoped her own biometrics did not betray her unease so obviously.
"Yes," she said. "Do not speak to her if you can avoid it."
"Have no worries about that," promised Polk. "Not if my life depended on it."
"Let us hope it does not come to that, Polk," said Zeth. "But her presence here cannot be a good thing."
"Surely the Fabricator General has merely dispatched her as a guard for the ambassador after all the troubles we have had," said Polk, his tone begging for reassurance.
"Perhaps, but I doubt it. To act merely as a bodyguard would be seen as beneath the skills of a tech priest assassin."
"Then why is she here?"
Zeth felt her irritation at Polk's questions grow, but forced it down.
"I expect we shall find out soon enough," she said.
This meeting with Kelbor Hal's lackey would need a clear head, and Zeth could not afford to be distracted by Polk's fear, even though it mirrored her own. The tech priest assassins were a body of mysterious and aloof killers who had existed since the settling of Mars in the distant past. A law unto themselves, they answered to no authority save that of unknown masters said to dwell in the shadows of the Cydonia Mensae. Melgator and his accomplice reached the plinth beneath the great portico, and Zeth wondered if this was how she was going to die, struck down by an assassin's blade, her vital fluids pouring down the steps of her forge. Melgator smiled, though Zeth found nothing reassuring in its reptilian insincerity. The ambassador and his companion came towards her, passing into the splayed shadows of the piston columns and golden portico. Melgator moved with the clicking gait of one whose lower limbs were augmetic, while the assassin flowed across the milky white marble of the floor as though on ice. Zeth saw that the assassin's legs were long and multi-jointed, fused together just above the ankles by a spar of metal, below which her legs ended not in feet, but in a complex series of magno-gravitic thrusters that skimmed her along just off the ground. Her athletic form was beautifully deadly, honed to perfect physicality by a rigorous regime of physical exercise, gene manipulation, and surgical augmentation. Melgator stopped before Zeth and bowed deeply, his arms spread wide.
"Adept Zeth," he began, "it is a pleasure to once again visit your unique forge."
"You are welcome, Ambassador Melgator," said Zeth. "This is my Magos apprentice, Adept Polk."
She left her words hanging, and Melgator read the pause expertly. He turned towards his companion, who wore a face mask fashioned in the form of a grinning crimson skull, with a horn of gleaming metal jutting from its chin.
"This is my associate, Remy Ari," said Melgator.
Zeth nodded towards Remy Ari, and the assassin inclined her head a fraction in acknowledgement. Zeth took a second to study the hard-wired targeting apparatus grafted to Remiari's mask and the long snake-like sensor tendrils that swam in the air from the rear portion of her cranium.
"And what brings you to my forge?"
asked Zeth, turning and leading Melgator towards the wall of bronze doors that led within. Polk dropped back to stand at her right shoulder, while Melgator and Remiari fell in smoothly to her left.
"I come to you as a great shadow hangs over our beloved planet, Adept Zeth.
Disaster strikes Mars at every turn, and in times of such trouble, friends should stand shoulder to shoulder.
Indeed, replied Zeth, as they passed into the forge and along its silver-skinned arterial halls. We have suffered greatly, and much has been lost that can never be recovered.
Alas, you speak the truth, said Melgator, and Zeth could barely keep the contempt she felt for his false concern from her field auras. Thus it is ever more imperative that friends should acknowledge one another and do whatever is necessary to aid one another.
Zeth did not answer Melgator's leading comment, and turned into Etna's processional, a passageway of ooze-like walls and burning braziers that led into a high-ceilinged chamber at the heart of Adept Zeth's forge. Formed from the intertwining of twisted columns of silver and gold, the web-like walls rose to a tapering point above the center of the chamber. Gracefully curved sheets of burnished steel and crystal rippled overhead, winding through the columns to form an impossibly beautiful latticework roof, like glittering shards of ice frozen in the moment of shattering. The toxic skies of Mars were visible through the gaps in the columns as angled slivers of cadmium, hazed by the void shielding that surrounded the highest peak of the forge. Beneath the apex of the roof, a wide shaft descended into the depths of the forge, and a fiery orange glow billowed upwards from the heart of the magma far below. Searing heat and waves of energizing power rippled the air over the shaft as Melgator made appropriately impressed noises. Receptors like thin, slitted gills opened in the folds of his neck as Melgator partook of the invisible currents of drifting electricity. Remiare paid the hot majesty of the space no mind. Her own energy receptors kept hidden beneath her body glove, and Zeth felt as though the assassin's attention was focused firmly on the cardinal weak points of her bronze armor. She shared a glance with Magos Polk, who assumed a deferential pose beside her, with his hands tucked into the sleeves of his robe.
It has been too long since I stood within the chamber of Vesta, said Melgator. Your current is exquisite. I can almost feel the fire of the red planet within me.
It has always been here, pointed out Zeth. Those who are friends to the Magma City are always welcome to take sustenance within its walls.
Then I should hope you count the Fabricator General amongst such friends.
Why should I not? Asked Zeth. Kelbor Hal has never expressed his displeasure with me. He continues the great work of the Mechanicum, does he not?
Indeed he does, said Melgator quickly. And he sends me to you in the spirit of peace in these dark days of loss and death, to assure you of his continued good will.
The spirit of peace, said Zeth, walking around the shaft in the center of the chamber.
Polk made to follow her, but she waved him away. The heat was intense, and she could feel her organic portions begin to sweat.
Is that why you come to me in the company of one of the sisters of Cydonia?
These are troubled times, Adept Zeth, said Melgator.
You said that already.
I'm aware of that, but it is a point I cannot make strongly enough, replied Melgator. An enemy strikes at us, weakens our forges, and only a fool dares to travel without precautions.
An assassin is a precaution? Asked Zeth,
turning towards Remiari.
Has the Cydonian sisterhood fallen so far that they are now mere bodyguards?
The assassin cocked her head to one side, like a bird of prey regarding a helpless morsel, and though glistening fabric obscured her expression, Zeth felt an acute tremor along the adamantium curve of her spine.
I can taste your fear of me, said Remiari softly,
her eyes like black marbles behind the horned death mask.
Yet, still you bait me with barbed words. Why would you do this when you know I can kill you?
Zeth controlled her breathing and metabolic rate with a measured release of glanded stims as Melgator said, There will be no killing, Remiari. This is a mission of renewed friendship in a time when allies are to be more prized than pure streaming data. Melgator turned to Zeth, his hands held out before him. Yes, I bring a warrior to your forge. But it is only because our very way of existence is threatened that I come so accompanied.
Threatened by whom? Does the Fabricator General know who unleashed the corrupt code into the Martian systems?
He does not know for certain, but he has strong suspicions, replied Melgator.
Any you would care to divulge?
Melgator began circling the fire shaft towards Zeth, lacing his hands behind his back as he walked.
"Perhaps," nodded Melgator. "But may I first ask how the Magma City escaped the devastation so many other less fortunate forges suffered?"
Zeth hesitated, unsure of how much Melgator knew and how much he only suspected. In truth, she wasn't entirely sure why her forge had been spared, though she had her suspicions, none of which she was comfortable sharing with a minion of the Fabricator General. In the end, she decided on a partial truth.
"I believe the singular nature of the new sphere prevented the debased code from entering my systems," she said.
"And yet the forges of Epluvium Maximum and Fabricator Locum Cain suffered in the attack. They have recently upgraded their information networks to the new sphere, have they not? So perhaps there is some other reason you were spared."
"If there is, I am not certain what it was," said Zeth,
hoping Melgator would read the honesty in her cant and not the evasion of her words. She prayed that Polk's Aegis barriers in his new spheric aura were in place.
"Then might it be the latest endeavor taking shape within your inner forge? It has not gone unnoticed that your newest creation, whatever it is, requires lowly transcribers sequestered from Terra and a great many psychers secretly brought down from the black ships."
"How can you think you know what goes on within my inner forge?" asked Zeth, shaken to the core of her being that Melgator was aware of such things.
Melgator laughed.
"Come now, Adept Zeth. You think the workings of any adept on Mars are truly hidden? Information is woven into every passage of electrons across the surface of the Red Planet, and you know how the spirits of machines love to share their secrets."
"The workings of my forge are my own to know, Melgator," snapped Zeth. "As I said, I believe that it was my adoption of the new sphere that saved my forge from destruction."
Melgator smiled ruefully.
"Very well. I will accept that. Perhaps if you had freely shared the technology of the new sphere with your fellow adepts, then Mars might have been spared the horror of the death of innocence."
"Perhaps if the Fabricator General had put more faith in the new sphere when I presented it to him, that might have been the case," countered Zeth.
Melgator smiled, conceding the point.
"May I speak frankly, Adept Zeth?"
"Of course. The Chamber of Vesta is a place of honest discourse."
"Then I will be blunt," said Melgator. "My master believes he knows the source of the attack on our infrastructure, and he seeks to rally all true sons and daughters of Ares to the defense of Mars."
"The defense of Mars?" asked Zeth, nonplussed. "Defense against whom?"
"Against Terra."
Zeth was stunned. Of all the answers she had expected Melgator to give, this had not been amongst them. She tried to cover her surprise by turning and looking out over the Martian landscape. The sky was turning from blue to purple, heavy, toxin-laden clouds sparking with lightning over the distant forge of Mondus Gamma.
"Terra,"
she said, slowly, as though tasting the word for the first time.
"Terra," repeated Melgator. "Now that the Great Crusade is almost at an end, the Emperor desires to end his union with Mars and take our world for his own."
"Kelbor Hal thinks the Emperor attacked us?"
asked Zeth, spinning to face Melgator.
"Do you realize how insane that sounds?"
Melgator approached her with a pleading look.
"Is it insane to want to hold on to what we have built here over the millennia, Adept Zeth? Is it insanity to suspect that a man who has all but conquered the entire galaxy should allow one world among millions to remain aloof from his empire? No. The attack on our world's information systems was but the first strike in breaking the Treaty of Olympus and bringing the Mechanicum to heel."
Zeth laughed in his face.
"I see now why you brought this assassin with you, Melgator, in case I should call you traitor and have you killed."
Melgator's stance changed from one of supplication to one of aggression in an instant, and hands that had once been outstretched towards her now dropped to his sides.
"You would do well to choose your next words carefully, Adept Zeth."
"Why would that be? Will you have Remy Ari here kill me if you don't like them?"
"No," said Melgator. "I would not be so foolish as to anger the Omnisire by murdering an adept of Mars in her own forge."
"The Omnisire," spat Zeth. You speak of the Emperor breaking faith with the Mechanicum, and in the next breath use him as a reason not to murder me?
I speak of the Omnisire as an aspect of the machine god yet to manifest, not the Emperor.
Most believe them to be one and the same.
But not you.
You already know what I believe, said Zeth, angered beyond caution. There is no machine god. Technology is science and reason, not superstition and blind faith. It's what I've always believed, and it's what I still believe. Now, if you're not going to kill me, get out of my forge.
Are you sure about this, Zeth? Asked Melgator. Turning your back on the Fabricator General will have dire consequences.
Is that a threat?
A threat? No. Merely a reiteration that we live in dangerous times and that the friendship of powerful allies would be no bad thing in the days ahead.
Friendship. Kelbor Hal asked me to side with him against Terra, barked Zeth. What manner of friend would ask such a thing?
Melgator slid his hands into the sleeves of his robes.
The kind that knows what is best for Mars.
Melgator slowly descended the steps of Zeth's forge, savoring the memory of Adept Zeth's admission of her disbelief in the machine god. It was all the excuse the Fabricator General needed to seize the Magma City and learn all the secrets of her forge, and Zeth had handed it to them on a plate. He wiped a hand across his brow. Sweat beaded on his forehead in the intolerably dry heat that wrapped the city like a shroud. Melgator had travelled far and wide in his role as ambassador, but this place had to rank as one of the most inhospitable on Mars. The sooner it was plundered and laid to waste, the better. Beside him, Remiari hovered effortlessly above the steps, her masked face unreadable in the orange-lit gloom.
"Zeth knows why she escaped the scrap code's attack," said Melgator. "Or at least she suspects she knows."
"Of course," answered Remiari.
"Her apprentice was bleeding fear and information from his new spheric aura. I have stored everything I could access from his files on Zeth's work in my memory coils, and I will explode them to the Fabricator General's logic engines upon our return to Olympus Mons."
"You can lift data from the new sphere?" "I didn't know that," said Melgator, more than a little unnerved.
"Of course. The secrets of the new sphere are well known to the Sisters of Cydonia, as are the means to manipulate the mind structure beyond it."
"What about his Aegis barrier?"
"Simplicity itself to overcome."
"Did he notice your presence?" asked Melgator.
"No, but I decided to fuse the portions of his mind that would have remembered anyway."
"If he did not detect your intrusion, why the need to burn out his memory synapses?"
Remiari turned her deathly face towards him, and Melgator was reminded that the assassins of Cydonia did not take kindly to questions.
"Because I enjoy making living things suffer,"
said Remiari.
"Zeth's apprentice will no longer be able to form memories that last. His usefulness as an individual is at an end."
Melgator swallowed, warier than ever of the monstrous creature beside him. At last he reached the bottom of the steps, where a skimmer palanquin of bronze and polished timber panels stood ready to carry him to the landing platform, upon which his transport waited.
"So how did Zeth defeat the scrap code attack?"
The black, soulless marbles of Remiari's eyes flickered as she retrieved and sorted the data.
"I do not know, and nor does Zeth, not completely. Though, the apprentice was of the opinion that a female named Dahlia Cythera was responsible."
"The transcriber Zeth brought from Terra. She did it?"
"So it would seem."
"Then we need to eliminate her as soon as possible," said Melgator. "Where is she?"
"Unknown. Her biometrics are not registered in the Martian database."
"She was working in Zeth's forge, and she's not even Cult Mechanicum?"
"Apparently not."
"Ah, Zeth, you're almost making it too easy for us,"
chuckled Melgator.
"Can you track this Dahlia Cythera?"
"I can, but it will be easier just to take the information from the people she knows,"
said Remiari.
"Archived work dockets list her as being assigned to a team of four individuals. Zeus Shaher, Severin Delmar, Melisin Oster,
and Caxton Torgal. Only Melisande Oster is still within the Magma City.
Where?
Within Asayamon Subhive, Epsilon, Aleph, Ultima, said Remiari. 50th floor, Shutter 17. Off shift until 0746 tomorrow morning.
Find her, hissed Melgator. Learn everything she knows.
The maglev was full, every seat taken. But the threatening presence of Rho Mu-31 assured them a private cabin, though it was still cramped with the five of them wedged in tight. Rho Mu-31 stood at the door to their cabin, his weapon stave held tight across his chest, leaving the four seats for Zouche, Dahlia, Severin, and Caxton. Zouche and Severin sat across from her, and Caxton lay with his head on her shoulder, snoring softly. The pale artificial light from the window gleamed from his tonsure's scalp, and Dahlia smiled as she leant back against the faux leather chair. She looked out over the Martian landscape as the rest of her companions slept. Even Rho Mu-31 was resting, the glow of his eyes dimmed as he conserved power, though his internal auspex was still vigilant. Beyond the energy-shielded glass, undulant plains stretched off into the distance, the grey emptiness of the polluted wastelands somehow beautiful to Dahlia. Unfinished or abandoned maglev lines stretched off into invisibility in long rows of sun-bleached concrete tees, and the sight brought a forlorn ache to Dahlia's chest. It had been years since she had seen a landscape as vast as this, and even though it was bleak and inhospitable, it was wide open, and the heavens above held the landscape protectively close to them. Bands of pollutants striped the sky like sedimentary rock, and columns of light pierced the darkness as ships broke atmosphere. A shiver travelled the length of Dahlia's spine as she felt the aching loneliness that had become part of her soul since her connection with the thing beneath the Noctis Labyrinthus. The desolate emptiness outside was so endless that Dahlia could easily imagine Mars to be dead, a world utterly scoured of life and abandoned for all eternity. She was tired, but couldn't sleep. The black emptiness behind her eyes lurked in the back of her mind like a hidden predator that would strike the instant she allowed the shadows to cloak it.
"Can't sleep, eh?"
asked Zouche, and Dahlia looked up. She had thought him to be asleep.
"No," agreed Dahlia, keeping her voice low. "A lot on my mind."
Zouche nodded and ran a hand over his shaven scalp.
"Understandable. We're out on a limb, Dahlia. I just hope this journey turns out to be worth it."
"I know it will, Zouche," promised Dahlia.
"What do you think we're going to find out there?"
"Honestly, I'm not sure. But whatever it is, I know it's in pain. It's been trapped in the darkness for such a long time, and it's suffering. We have to find it."
"And what happens when we do?"
"What do you mean?"
"When we find this thing, this dragon, are you thinking about freeing it?"
"I think we have to," said Dahlia. "Nothing deserves to suffer like its suffering."
"I hope you're right," said Zouche.
"You think I'm wrong to want to help?"
"Not necessarily," said Zouche. "But what if this thing is meant to suffer? After all, we don't know for sure who put it there, so perhaps they had a very good reason to do so. We don't know what it is, so maybe whatever it is should be left in the darkness forever."
"I don't believe that," said Dahlia.
"Nothing deserves to suffer forever." "Some things do," said Zouche, his voice little more than a hushed whisper.
"What, Zouche?" demanded Dahlia. "Tell me, who or what deserves to suffer forever?"
Zouche met her stare. She could see that it was taking all his control to maintain his composure, and she wondered what door she'd opened with her question. He sat in silence for a moment, then said,
"Back before people lived freely on Nusa Kambangan, it was once a prison, a hellish place where the worst of the worst were locked up. Murderers, clone surgeons, rapists, gene thieves and serial killers, and tyrants."
"Tyrants?"
"Oh yes, indeed," said Zouche,
and Dahlia thought she detected more than a hint of bitter pride in his voice.
"Cardinal Tang himself was held there."
"Tang? The ethnarch?"
"The very same," nodded Zouche. "When his last bastion fell, he was taken in chains to Nusa Kambangan though he was only there a few days. Word got out of who he was, and another prisoner cut his throat. Though, if you ask me, he got off lightly.
Having your throat cut is getting off lightly? Asked Dahlia, horrified by Zush's coldness.
After what Tang did? Absolutely, said Zush. After all the bloody pogroms, death camps and genocides, you think his suffering should have ended swiftly? Tang deserved to rot in the deepest, darkest hole of terror, condemned to suffer the same torments and agonies he inflicted on his victims. In the end, his suffering was much quicker than the millions he put to death during his reign. So, yes, I make no apology for thinking he got off lightly. Trust me, Dahlia, there are some that deserve to be left in the darkness to pay for their crimes for all eternity.
Tears rolled down Zeus's cheeks as he spoke, and Dahlia felt a wave of sorrow as she felt a measure of his pain, even though she didn't fully understand it.
My parents died in one of Tang's camps, continued Zeus, wiping the tears away with the sleeve of his robe, for the crime of falling in love when they were genetically assigned to other partners. They kept their relationship a secret, but when I was born, it was obvious to everyone they produced an inferior offspring, and they were hauled off to Tang's death camp on Rune Island.
Oh, Zush, that's terrible, said Dahlia. I'm so sorry. I didn't know.
Zush shrugged and stared beyond the glass of the compartment.
How could you? But it doesn't matter. Tang's dead, and the Emperor guides us now. People like Tang won't ever rise again now that the Imperium is in his hands.
You're not inferior, said Dahlia,
cutting across his train of words.
What?
He said, looking back at her.
I said you're not inferior, repeated Dahlia.
You might think you are because you look different to the rest of us, but you're not. You're a brilliant engineer and a loyal friend. I'm glad you're with me, Zush. I really am. He smiled and nodded.
I know you are, and I'm grateful for that. But I know what I am. You're a good girl, Dahlia, so I'd be obliged if you didn't mention this to anyone. You understand?
Of course, said Dahlia. I won't say a word.
I think the rest are going to sleep all the way there anyway.
Quite probably,
agreed Zush, a discreetly extended mechadendrite linking with the port in the compartment's wall. Flickering light ghosted behind his eyelids as he linked with the maglev's onboard logic engine. It was easy to forget that the Mechanicum had substantially modified Zush, for most of his augmetics were subtle, and he was reticent about openly displaying them to one not of the cult Mechanicum.
It's going to take us 2 days to reach the point nearest the Noctis Labyrinthus, an outlying hub of Mondus Gamma in the northern Syrian subfabrics.
2 days? Why so long?
This is a supply train, explained Zush. We're going to pass through a lot of the borderland townships on the edge of the Palidus. According to the onboard timetable, we're about to reach Ash Border. Then we'll pass through Dune Town, Crater Edge, and Red Gorge before we begin the descent to the Syria Planum and Mondus Gamma.
Not big on originality when it comes to their settlement names, are they? Observed Dahlia.
Not really. I suppose they just name it as they see it, said Zush. When you live out on the edge of civilization, there's a virtue in simplicity.
I think there's a virtue in that, wherever you are, said Dahlia.
The hab was warm, but then it was always warm. Hot air rising from the magma lagoon rolled up the flanks of the volcano in dry, parching waves to leach the moisture from the air like a giant dehumidifier. Melisin lay on her bed, with one hand thrown over her forehead. Sweat gathered in the spoons of her collarbones, and she felt uncomfortably sticky and hot. The atomizer was turned on, but might as well have been switched off for all the difference it was making. She rolled onto her side, unable to sleep, and unable to stop thinking of what might be happening to Dahlia and the others. She told herself it wasn't guilt, but only half believed it. Zeth had placed her with Dahlia with the express purpose of passing on her impressions and insights into the young transcriber's mind. And that was exactly what she had done. There had been no betrayal, no breach of trust, and certainly no disloyalty. The only betrayal would have been if she had failed in her duty to her mistress. Why, then,
did she feel so bad about telling Adept Zeth of Dahlia's plans? Melissa knew exactly why she felt bad. In the weeks she had worked with Dahlia Cythera, Melissa had rediscovered the joy of working on the frontiers of technology. Together they had discovered new and wondrous things, devices and theoretical science that they had gone on to prove valid. How long had it been since she, or indeed anyone in the Mechanicum, had done that? True, Adept Zeth was forever pushing the boundaries of what was known and accepted, but she was a tiny cog in a larger machine, and there was only so much she dared risk. The Mechanicum was old and unforgiving with those who disobeyed its strictures. They had been gone less than a day, and already she missed them. She wished she knew where they were, so she could have tapped into the Martian networks to follow their progress, but she had wiped Dahlia's destination from her memory coils. Right now, they could be anywhere, en route to the far side of the planet for all she knew. Melissa had got used to their foibles, strengths, and blind spots. She had nurtured them, blended them together until they were a team, working more efficiently and more enthusiastically than any of them had ever worked before. Now they were off making good use of that mentoring, and she was left behind. She swung her legs out of bed and ran a hand through her hair. It was matted and sweaty, and no amount of time in the sonic shower would make it feel clean. She padded softly from the bed alcove and made her way to the kitchenette to fix a pot of caffeine. If she wasn't going to get any sleep, she might as well use the time productively. She yawned as the heating ring fired the pot, wiping sweat from her brow as the pot bubbled and hissed. She poured a cup and sat in the dining nook within the polarized glass bay that looked out over the surface of the red planet. This high up, Melissin was above the distorting fumes that filmed the lower-level windows with grime and pyroclastic deposits. Far below her, the magma city blazed with light, an ocean of glowing industry and a desert of industrial wasteland. Silver trails of maglevs spun out from the city, travelling to all parts of Mars, but beyond them, the planet was shrouded in banks of dust and polluted fogs. Melissin put down her cup and leaned her forehead on the hot glass. Lights moved in the city, and glittering transits ferried cargo and supplies to the port facilities.
"Wherever you are, Dahlia, I wish you well," she whispered,
feeling very alone. She frowned as she realized she wasn't alone. Her biometric surveyors were reading another life form in her hab.
"I was wondering when you would notice me,"
said a voice from the shadows. Melissa jumped at the sound, looking up in frozen surprise as a lithe, sensual woman glided from the darkness. She was clad in a skin-tight red body glove, and a pair of finely wrought pistols were sheathed at her hips. Melissa covered her surprise and said,
"I knew you were there. I was just waiting to see when you would announce yourself." "A lie, but one necessary for you to feel you are still in control," said the woman.
"Who are you, and what are you doing in my hab?" asked Melissa, still too surprised to feel anything but annoyance.
"My name is irrelevant, because soon you won't remember it," said the woman.
And as she moved into the light, Melissa saw the golden death mask she wore.
"But, for the record, it is Remiari."
Melissa's annoyance turned to fear as she realized what this woman was.
"That's half my question answered."
Remiari cocked her head to one side and said,
"You still think you have a measure of control, don't you?"
"What do you want?" asked Melissa, pushing herself further into the dining nook.
"You know what I want."
"No, actually," said Melissa.
"I don't." "Then I shall tell you,"
said Remiari.
"I want you to tell me the whereabouts and destination of Dahlia Cythera."
Melissa furrowed her brow, as if in thought, and activated her silent alarm. Adept Zeth would now be aware of her plight, and a squad of Mechanicum protectors would soon be dispatched to her rescue. All she had to do was stall.
"Dahlia," she said at last, "why do you want to know about her?"
"No more questions," said Remiari. "Tell me what I want to know, and I promise you won't suffer."
"I can't," said Melissa,
"even if I wanted to. I might have known what you want, but I don't remember anymore."
"You're lying."
"I'm not. Adept Zeth had me erase any knowledge of where Dahlia was going from my memory coils."
She regretted her smug tone instantly, as Remyari ghosted closer, and Melisande saw the red light of the magma lagoon reflected on her death mask. Her face was the visage of something vile and terrible, a leering monster from her darkest nightmares. Even amid her fear, she recognized the exquisite work of the assassin's gravitic thrusters, the sinuous form of a killer, bred and trained from birth.
"Then that's very bad news for you."
"And why's that?" asked Melisande, trying to muster some bravado.
"Because nothing is ever really erased, Melisande,"
said Remyari, as a silver spike extended from her forefinger. Despite the heat in the small dwelling hab, Melisande suddenly felt very cold indeed, as she recognized it as a data spike. "Why do you want to find Dahlia?" asked Melisande, the words coming out in a fear-induced rush. "I mean, she's nothing, just a transcriber from Terra. All she did was take notes of our work. Really, why do you want her?" Remyari's head darted forward like a feeding bird's, and she laughed, the sound soulless and dead.
"You are trying to keep me talking, because you believe help is on its way. But it isn't. No one is coming, Melisande. I am the only one hearing that insultingly simple silent alarm your implants are broadcasting."
"I'm telling you, I erased the things you're looking for."
"You may have erased your memory coils, but the soft meat beneath remembers,"
said Remyari, while softly wagging her finger.
"The mechanicum never deletes anything."
Melisande glanced down at her cup of caffeine and wondered if she would be quick enough to throw it in the assassin's face. That question was answered a moment later. One second, the red-clad woman was standing before her, the next, she was seated next to her, pressing her against the warm glass of her hab. A hand with fingers like steel rods shot out and gripped her throat, tilting her head back.
"I don't know what you want!"
screamed Melisande as the assassin's data spike pressed against the augmetic orb that replaced her right eye.
"I'll find what I want," promised Remyari. "All I have to do is dig deep enough."